Hi.
Hi.
Long time no see.
Yeah. Don't know why I'm starting like this. Can I start over? Oh my God, Brittany, can I tell you? I worked out twice yesterday. I worked out twice today. I'm like,
Oh
I
my
just
God.
finished eating a hamburger and onion rings and a big Coca-Cola, and I might die. I don't know. We're gonna see if I'm gonna go to the gym tomorrow.
Endorphins
On
from your multiple
that note,
gym.
welcome everyone to this episode of Squintcast. My name is Kelly.
I'm Brittany.
And today we're gonna talk about Bones. Season 4, episode 5, titled
Do I get the privilege of saying the title? Okay, here we go. Are you ready? The
100%.
perfect pieces in the purple pond.
Was it
Is that called?
one eye, one
Onomatopoeia?
horn, flying purple people leader? One eye, one horn, flying purple people
Purple people
leader.
leader.
Do you sing that one to Wayne?
No, I don't, but I should. He's started. I know we're trying to start the episode, but he has
Who
started
cares?
to. He's making up his own songs now, and they're
Oh,
so
good.
random.
Good. I was
They're
thinking
about
about the, yeah, what does he sing about?
like, oh, mommy, go work on computer.
Oh, no way.
We called her
No
Papa.
way.
I
That
was like, what are you saying right now? I'm like trying to listen to the words to his song, and I'm like, what is happening?
funny.
It's so cute. Oh my God.
Oh my
Anyway,
God.
you want to know who this episode was written and directed by?
No, do you want to know the song I sing for my dog? Oh,
Yes. Is it the cheese tax? The cheese tax. I was listening to our episode going into work the other day, and I was like walking into work going, the cheese tax.
tax, the cheese tax. When the food comes out, you gotta pay the cheese. No, I sing a couple of songs. I was thinking like, "Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my good
Oh, I
time
love that song.
dog." And then I go, "Tiki, such a good boy." I just sing like, "Good boy. He's such a handsome boy. He's my handsomest boy in the world." And I just like sing songs like that to him. He goes, "You're
Brings me so
such a
much joy.
good boy. He's my good boy. He's my good boy." And
And he's
he's
probably like,
like,
yeah, I am.
"Yes.
I'm your good
Yeah,
boy.
of
Now I
course I'm
need
your
the
good
cheese
boy.
tax.
Give me the cheese tax.
So
Time to
cute.
pay
I
up.
love
Pony up the cheese tax,
Pay up the
bitch.
cheese tax.
What do you think we're doing here?"
If I'm such a good boy, I need the cheese tax.
Oh my God.
And to anyone who has not listened to the last episode of our podcast, go back and you will understand. Okay, let me tell you. So we have this episode was directed by, and I butchered it the last two times I tried to say it, Jinote Swark. I'm so
God.
sorry to this
Who? Okay.
person.
What was the last one they did?
So he directed Spaceman in a Crater, and he also
Spaceman in
directed
a crater.
The Verdict in the Story as well in season three.
Oh, right. So this was the French guy. This is what
Yes.
I remember him. The French guy's the one that he was like directing everything from the perspective of a Frenchman. And it
Yes.
was like his perception of like astronauts, or his perception of the justice system. And now we have
Yeah.
his perception. This is wild, actually,
Of
now that you
a
think of
person
it.
with, I don't want to spoil it.
No spoilers, Brittany.
Okay, I will keep it
Watching
together.
you. I'm watching you. See? I'm doing like this. Watching
Okay.
you.
You're
Okay.
watching me. So yeah,
Watching you.
so Jeannot Swark.
Yes.
Swark. I'm definitely not saying that right, and I'm
Doesn't
so
matter.
sorry.
Don't worry about
But anyway, he so we've seen him, we've seen episodes of his before. I think you'll find it interesting that the person who wrote the episode is Josh Berman, which he directed or he wrote, sorry, Death in the Saddle and The Wannabe in the Weeds. And then this is the first one in season four. He'll go on to direct three in season three and four. See, three in season four, sorry. Two in season five, and then one last one in season six. And I keep saying direct, but he's the writer. He wrote a ton of episodes for CSI. And he wrote almost every episode for Drop Dead Diva as well.
Okay, right. We've talked about this guy before.
Yeah, we have for sure.
I'm trying to remember what else he wrote for.
He hasn't, it looks like he's been taking a bit of a break. He hasn't done anything recently, but.
Okay.
Anyway, he's.
I see him producing a show a couple years ago.
Yep.
That's quite the, yes, for sure. So he did eight episodes of Bones altogether, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So two in season three, and then I think three in season four.
Death in the Saddle. Okay, that was the one with the people who were pretending to be
the horsey play. Yes. Yes.
So that is interesting because there's a scene in this that's not similar, but it has like a setup that's
the
like
same
hotel-y,
vibe.
Conference okay. room kind of the hotel vibes, right?
Okay. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, good, yes. good. You're getting my drift. Everyone who's listening is getting my drift. Excellent. Okay, let's get started because this one is, there's a lot of good stuff in this one. There's a lot of good stuff.
This episode was supposed to, so it aired September 24th, 2008, sorry. Today I said it was 2013 to someone, so just, apparently, I'm having trouble with the dates. So,
whoever
September
that was,
24th,
sorry.
2008.
Sorry, whoever you are.
Sorry. One of my coworkers.
They're probably not even listening, so don't worry.
Probably not, so it's fine.
Who
okay,
was it?
So, one of my coworkers.
They don't listen,
at me
do
like,
they?
What? No, I don't think so.
Exactly. So, who cares?
Who cares? So, this episode, interestingly enough, it was supposed to be season four, episode one. So this episode was supposed to be the premiere of season four. If there had not been a whole mess up with the writer strike.
Right.
So the way that it was originally set, obviously there's details in this episode that would have had to have happened, like Angela and Hodgins breaking up.
Right. So when we get to it, I'll try to remember. But it's just there's that's interesting timeline wise. And
yes.
Also like if you put it in that place, I don't think it would have worked.
No, I don't think so. I think it works really well.
In episode one, I think it works better now because there's time that has passed.
Yeah, and we've had a couple interns too. I feel like the intern we get introduced to in this episode, he couldn't have been the first intern since Zach.
Yeah, we'll talk about him.
It
okay,
had to be.
Let's go, baby. Let's go, baby.
And final question. Yes. Have we not had a Russell or Max encounter in this whole season so far?
No, haven't seen Brendan's family at all.
Isn't
they
that
haven't
weird?
Even been mentioned.
So weird. Okay, I'm done. Those are all my questions. Shall we?
Yes, start us off. I'm listening, I promise. I'm just going to step away
for
no
one
problem. Second. Go.
So we're inside an abandoned warehouse of some kind. And there are two teenagers that look much older than teenagers, but the implication is that they're teenagers. And it's strongly implied that they just had sex. And she is underwhelmed. And he is feeling like he is the king of the castle. So he is like, oh, like I gotta go pee, but maybe we should like bone again before your friends get here. And then so anyway, he goes and pees. And when he goes out to this, it's kind of like it almost looks like at like a sewage plant, except it's not big enough. It's like a reserve tank kind of thing. So he goes to pee in it, and when he starts peeing in it, the water turns purple. But the water looked disgusting before. Anyway, but it turns like this bright purple color. And then as he's peeing, all of these body parts start coming to the surface of the water. And he starts freaking out. And he's like, Karen, are you sure I'm the only guy you've ever had sex with? And they just pan back to her. And she's like, no. But she doesn't answer. She's just like, why? Anyway, and he runs. He's like, Karen, I need your help.
Yes.
So, yeah, obviously not ideal to be peeing in any body of water and find body parts. And a change of water color. Lots of confusion. Yes.
Lots of confusion. Here. I love how he accuses her immediately of giving him an STD.
Oh, like, immediately.
It's a typical guy thing is like, are you sure it's mine? Did you give me something? That kind of stuff. It's like automatic 100%. Slut shaming. That's crazy.
And she's just
crazy.
Like,
she doesn't care. She's over it. And her name is Karen, which is unfortunate as it is.
Well, his name is Todd. So this is like Todd. The worst name combo.
Nothing good. Nothing good has come of any man of named a Todd.
And I'm so sorry if you're listening.
Well, I'll take
Todd,
that back. But... There's probably lots of good Todds, but I'm just saying Todd's kind of a suspect name, along with what's another one? Trevor. Trevor's a bad vibe.
Trevor
kind of name too.
I'm trying to think of another example. Maybe like a Brent.
Yeah, you don't run into that many Brents. I think you probably meet more Trevors and Kevins and
definitely
than you do Brents.
Oh, Kevin. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Scene two. I'm going to let you take this because, whoa.
We transition with this sort of creepy Alfred Hitchcock music, and it's Sweets, who's visiting and talking with Zach Addy, who is locked up in some kind of like prison asylum, I think, after being charged with murder. Zach is basically wearing socks on his hands, which looks more psycho.
The gloves don't help his image.
Honestly,
that's for sure.
I was like, I forgot that his hands got blown off in the last. Anyway, so I'm looking at him wearing these. Looks like he's wearing socks on his hands. So
and
I was like, that's creepy.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Not a good start for Zach.
No, regardless, Zach's having some kind of logic off with Sweets. They do this logic argument stuff, and it's the way Zach's always been about, you know, regretting the situation he's in. And Sweets is trying to get some kind of emotional empathy, compassion, some kind of guilt or regret that he might feel for killing somebody. But Zach's pretty adamant that he's more guilty for, he feels more bad about being sucked in by this person who made this argument that he latched onto in a logical way, and it ended up being flawed. Anyway, it's this whole flawed logic situation.
It's interesting because at no point in this interaction does he ever admit to murdering someone.
No, he never just says that.
Never says that ever. It's just talking about
wild.
How he was illogical.
Yeah, it was so wild.
So interesting.
So Sweets is there talking to him. I'm not sure why he's there. I'm curious. I don't know if it's like a follow-up thing, like he's adding on to the case file, or it's just something he's like doing on his own time because he's interested. I was curious because there's a couple of things that happen here. Sweets is interviewing him. Who knows? Then Sweets starts to leave because he's just not happy with where the conversation isn't going, because he really wants Zach to work on remorse, feeling remorseful.
Yeah.
Anyway, his card that he uses to swipe in and out of this room doesn't work. The card swipe doesn't, the magnetic strip is messed up.
Yeah.
So I immediately thought, oh, that's weird. Like, that's an interesting detail. I was like, is this some kind of foreshadowing? I automatically thought, this is my automatic thought, was that Sweets was there like off the record. I thought, oh, maybe his card expired and he's trying to get away with interviewing this convicted murderer just for his own book or like his own study kind of thing. So that was my immediate thought.
My immediate thought that was that he overstayed, like stayed past the time he was allowed to, but he was just there because he wanted to talk to him. But he does say to specifically to Zach. He says, you know, you'll only be released from the psychiatric institution if we cure you of your delusions. So I think that it at this point, we know that he was tried for murder and that he was found to be not criminally responsible. And if they can show that he has made progress, then he could be released. So I think Sweets is there to try to encourage that to happen.
We're planting a seed here. And also, he says, Sweet says to Zach that Zach is delusional because he thinks he's not delusional. Like, it sort of proves that he's delusional. And then we have another creepy transition. So into the next scene. And I love these creepy transitions. It reminds me of Intern in the Incinerator when they did the smoky transitions. It was all creepy. I love a fun transition. Like, it was very Hitchcockian. I think it was fun.
This episode was so well done, from the directing to the writing. It was my favorite episode, I think, so far in season 4. So
I laughed so hard. Like, there was a couple of times I was laughing. So
you never texted me.
I'm sorry. I was, what was I doing?
No, I'm just teasing you. I texted Kelly. Oh, okay. I texted Kelly and I told her to text me, and she reached a certain part in this episode, but we'll talk about it when it comes.
I was getting dressed and leaving the house as I was watching the show, because I was like trying to make notes, and then when you changed the day to record, I was like, oh good, I'll just watch the show for enjoyment now, and then I'll watch it again tomorrow, I'll make notes, finish it off. But anyway, yes, I saw the scene.
You saw the scene and you laughed. Okay.
Oh my god.
We find out, so we end up back at this warehouse, and we're there with this FBI agent who is so sassy. It is unbelievable. This guy is hilarious. And so they point out that there are exactly 12 body parts. And this agent is saying, oh yeah, that's an interesting anomaly. There's an interesting anomaly that there's no head. Mm-hmm. And Brendan's like, wow, no head. That is odd. He's like, yeah, that's why I said anomaly. And so Booth goes off and is like, yo, you don't get to talk to my partner like that. I'm paraphrasing, but he tells him off. Yo. So anyway, so they go on, and he makes some off color. Like, he makes some comments again. They kind of go back and forth. Everything was fine. And at the end of the day, but Brennan is like, Booth, slow your roll. I can take care of myself. I'm a big girl. Calm down. She concludes that based on the size of the limbs, that they're looking at a fully grown male, so adult male, and she doesn't really know why the water went purple, so she's saying Hodgins is gonna have to look at it. So he says, okay, here we go. So you want me to get them to drain the whole pond, and ship it to the Jeffersonian. Here we go. She's like, I just need a small sample. But you know what? Heads are pretty heavy, and if it is at the bottom, you're correct, we should probably drain it. And so he's like, we're draining it. He makes this announcement. He's like so excited. He used to get so annoyed when she would be like, okay, bring
but
it then, all
yeah but he does have make a face. He's like, oh, so I suppose you want to drain this whole thing and take it back to the Jeffersonian? And she's like, no, but and then he makes his face when she says, yeah, let's drain it. And he goes, oh man, like, damn, I was hoping to say no, but anyway.
It's like when you offer someone help and you kind of like, you're doing it because you feel like it's like what you should do, but you're kind of hoping they're going to be like,
I hope, please say no,
don't
please
worry.
It's like when you call someone on the phone, you're like, don't pick up, please don't.
Oh
pick
yeah,
up.
Don't pick
please
up.
Don't answer the phone. I'm calling you, but don't answer, okay?
I'm returning your call, but I don't really want
to
talk to
you. I don't want to talk to you. Oh my god. I don't want to talk to you, but I'm calling, you know?
That totally happens. That is so relatable. Okay, so they're draining it. They're draining the pond, and then we have our opening credits. Dun 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 dun.
We'll be right back.
exactly. So where are we?
Back at the lab. Back at the lab.
We have, okay, I have some issues here, and I have an idea of, I might be giving myself away, but Angela is here helping examine remains.
You know, her other job, drawing happy faces, drawing happy people and examining body parts. Remember the first episode, or she used to not even be able to be around a body.
She pipes up. Listen, don't even start with me. Okay. Angela, I have issues with this woman in this episode. She says, she observes that perhaps she seems to think that the fingers are burnt. This woman should not be touching anything. Get this woman out of here. I'm sorry. Anyway, we meet the new intern. The intern of the day. I have to say, again, I'm going to mention it again. I love this bit. This bit is cracking me up. I think it's really funny to commit to something like this. Also, giving all these actors work is very kind. To bring them in for a day, like for 1 week of shooting, it's awesome. I love it. Anyway, so
spoiler alert.
Yes.
We will see him again.
Okay, well, that's good.
Many times.
Fun to have them rotate like that, right?
Yeah.
Like they come in and out. It's kind of fun. Because they know what they're getting into when they come back, right?
And so eventually, some of them start working together too, which is pretty cool.
Oh,
anyway, fun. Sorry, carry on.
No, stop. It's okay. I'm very accustomed to this interruption, Brittany.
His name is
Mr. Bray. Our intern of the day states that people sometimes burn their fingerprints off to conceal their identity. And after reading that I just wrote it down, I realized something. Later. Anyway, it just clicked right now. Anyway, I wrote, who is this guy? Anyway, Brennan says he's my brightest, you know, student. And all I wrote was, he is a white guy. Anyway, Cam makes a joke. This is my favorite. Cam makes a joke about the shoes they found in the reservoir with the body parts. They're a very weird looking shoe. And she says something like, oh, so, because they're like kids' shoes, like toddler shoes or something. They look very youthful.
They're very youthful.
What do you call that?
Yeah.
Juvenile. They're juvenile shoes.
Yeah.
It's just like, so we have like a toddler man. Like she's making this sarcastic joke and then nobody gets it. And then she says to the intern, oh, sarcasm doesn't work here. And then he looks at her because he doesn't get her joke. And I'm like, no one gets Cam's jokes here. It's such a waste. It's a waste of jokes.
It's a waste. She was on fire this episode.
Oh, she was on all cylinders. I loved
her.
Oh,
yeah. We find out a couple details that there was that there's hesitation, even though we don't have the head when the cut by where the head would have been. There was some hesitation marks, indications of hesitation. So perhaps the victim was connected with his or her or his. We know it's a him, his murderer. He died between 2 and 4 days ago. He's got some interesting genetic defects in his bones that point to something called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Yes.
Which obviously is going to help them figure out who this victim is, because then they can go and talk to orthopedic physicians and put some feelers out there.
Sometimes I think they're a little lucky with this stuff because, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it's
especially
like, oh, he
since
has this weird genetic condition.
Yeah.
Only so many people have it.
Exactly.
Let's find out.
Oh, perfect. It's him. It's very helpful. So Hodgins walks in and he announces why the water ended up turning purple, which is pretty cool. So when this dude urinated in the pool, which apparently Hodgins knows the exact average rate of flow for males under 45, which, in case you wanted to know, was 21 milliliters per second.
Thank you, Brittany. Unnecessary detail.
Important detail. So Anyway, it's because of some special algae that was growing. So that's when this guy started peeing in it. It was he peed fast enough that it irritated the algae and caused the water to go purple, which is kind of cool.
Right.
During this episode, we find out that Hodgins is supposed to be moving into Zach's old space. And Hodgins is having none of it. This episode, he clearly is having a major falling out with Cam and is not seeing eye to eye with her. And there's lots of opportunity, lots of experiences. We're going to talk about a lot of moments where they are just butting heads and he's just being a total dick.
I don't think they're butting heads. I think he's just being a dick to everybody. And
yeah, he's struggling.
The way he's acting around her, and especially even in this moment where she asked him, are you going to move into Zach's office? Which, you know, Hodgins needs a fucking office. He's been sitting around out in the open.
Yeah.
Messing around with his microscopes, and he needs his own office. Anyway, he responds to her in this, he's the way he does it. He picks up a rubber glove and blows on the rubber glove to put it on his hand. And he's being flippant with her. And I felt the disrespect coming through the screen.
He's almost being childish. Like,
he's being a brat and he's being like, just like meh, like a teenager.
Like na 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 boo boo. Meh.
He's just being a dick.
Anyway. Like purposely defiant. But in this moment, Brennan mentions, or Angela, I guess, mentions Zach's name because she answers what's going on. That Cam wants him to move into Zach's old room. And in this moment, Wendell's like, who is this person? Okay. Because Brennan is like, oh, don't worry. I know Zach set a very high standard, but I tell all my grad students not to worry about trying to meet that bar. He's like, I didn't even know who this is.
There is no way this guy doesn't know who Zach is. He was literally convicted of killing a dude. He was an apprentice to a cannibalistic serial killer who terrorized the people of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way he doesn't know who this is.
And he was part of the team investigating that serial killer. Listen, so that would have come out in the news for sure. Like, Zach Addy.
Listen.
Gormagon's assistant offers, also.
And then Angela offers up like, oh, ask me anything. Come, I'll spill all the tea. I'm like, Angela.
I'll spill the tea and I get major, like, I'm hitting on you vibes.
Okay. I have so many... We have to hurry up and get to these places.
There's a lot of sexual tension, but only one way.
It's so crazy. My thing is, I think the Jeffersonian, you know when you get fired? Oh, wait, you've never been fired. You know when people get fired and they get escorted out of the building with a fucking banker's box by security?
I have seen it in the movies, yes.
Listen, it does happen in real life. It's happened in front of me when I worked at the accounting firm. That happened a few times. I got fired. You know, it happened to me.
Yeah.
And they wash their hands of you. There's no mention. You are wiped clean from the record. Yeah. The Jeffersonian Institute that is funded by huge corporate like families with billions of dollars would never like want him to be even discussed. You know what I mean? Like Zach would not be a topic of conversation ever. He'd be like the, you know, the one they never, what's the word that they say, Voldemort?
He who should not be named.
He who shall not be named. Exactly.
But it's such a, he's such a huge stain on their reputation. It just doesn't make any sense why they would be talking about him.
Anyway,
so
I've seen identities removed from office websites faster, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. We did forget a detail in the very beginning of the episode that is relevant here. And that is that Booth is having some serious back pain.
Oh, God.
And he does not want help. Brennan keeps offering to help him. Didn't realize she was a chiropractor, but you know.
Back pain same. Shit? Jesus Christ.
He must be getting old, over the age of 30, and you start having back pain. How old is he supposed to be? 36?
38?
Who? I can't remember.
Booth? I thought it was 38, but who knows, man?
Late 30s. So there we're cutting to a scene where we're back in Booth's car. And yes.
Come talk on, to me. Brittany. Tell me what's happening in this car right now. What's happening?
What do you mean?
But who's driving?
Oh, there we go. Brennan.
Come on! Brennan is driving. Brittany! You of all people. I'm like, what do you mean? Second time.
Was there sexual tension or something that I missed?
This is the second time you haven't made a big deal about Brennan driving. She's driving his car. And I was like, this season is all about, season four is all about Brennan driving. I think it's so funny.
Brennan takes back the road.
She's taking back her power.
But the only reason that she's driving is because his back hurts. Oh my god, I thought you were gonna say that they like, did I miss an important detail? Like,
no,
major sexual driving. Tension or something. That isn't a very important detail. You're right.
This is only like this third time we've seen her drive.
That's true.
Because she drove has a in nice California. Car. She drove in LA because she told him she was gonna tell on him because he got the convertible. Then she drove her own car in the last episode.
Yeah.
And then she's driving now.
Okay. It's very important. This is a pivotal moment that I just scanned over with the mundane details. Well,
it's only because you're always like, where's my car, man? Dude, where's my car? Yeah, exactly.
She's never driving her own car except for the last episode.
Exactly.
Okay. So they're talking and then Booth wants changed subjects from the fact that his back is hurting. So he's like, wait a second. You're trying to talk about details of the case and you're talking about my back. Based on this behavior, you must be breaking in a new intern. She's like, oh my God, how did you know? Because he knows you so well and you should probably just get married now. Whatever, no big deal. Anyway, so they are looking for some kid.
I love it.
Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And Angela was able to track down Jared Addison, 25 years old. And they're on their way to his house to go meet with his mom.
Yeah, but not before Booth brings up Jared Addison's like whole profile on the computer. It's like a police computer attached to the car or something. And Brennan's like looking at the file while she's driving and he starts going, look at the road. And they start having this argument about how she's a good driver. And just like,
I'm an excellent driver.
It's funny, man. It's so funny because they're acting like this is a married couple moment because they're just like,
oh yeah. They should just get married. They're already there. They just gotta put a ring on it.
Stop it!
Oh, when are they gonna kiss? You're killing me. We're four seasons in. Anyway, okay. Moving on. So,
next, we have Booth and Brennan arriving at a woman's house. I'm assuming it's Jared Addison's house. She's in the middle of gardening? Landscaping?
Yeah.
We don't know. They're using the special shoes that he ordered that they found on the victim. They found the disease markers and then they found other markers to prove that it was Jared.
Yeah.
I want to know what those fucking markers are. Cause if they're going to this woman's house with a pair of shoes and a disease and not checking for any other identity and identifying things, and they're just going to go up to a woman and say, hey, your kid's dead.
We have your son. Well, especially since we find out that she never reported him missing. Like,
right.
It's not like they have some missing persons database that's like, okay, this woman knows that her son is missing. They're going there. He could have opened the door.
Exactly. Plus, the woman looks like she's 30 years old. Her son's 25. This is impossible.
Good for her.
Brennan wants to see the son's room immediately. And Booth is like, oh, maybe a little too soon there, Brennan. But then the woman says, okay. And she lets them in his room immediately, which is interesting. So we're introduced to this kid, this person's room. I say kid, he's 25. He's an adult man living at home. He has this debilitating disease. By the way, let's talk about Elner. What's it called?
Danlos? Ehlers-Danlos?
Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Apparently, yeah. I read on the internets that 1 in 5,000 people have this disorder, which is...
That's a lot.
A lot of people. I think there are perhaps a different...
like degrees of it, I guess?
Degree. Thank you. I can't talk today. I worked out 18 times in the last 2 days. my muscles are going... different degrees of, you know...
severity, I guess.
Severity. Thank you.
These I got you.
Same words. We're mashing them together. It doesn't matter. I think there's different levels of the disease.
There must be. Is that's a lot.
It's a lot of people. I didn't know it wasn't that rare. Like, it's not as rare as I thought. So it's, but it's an, it's weird. It's like all in your joints and shit. So you can be like double jointed. So I think somebody who's double jointed has this condition, but then other people have more extreme sort of severe cases of it where, like their skin almost detaches from their skeleton. There's all kinds of, it's about the things being attached. So your joints, your tendons, your skin, like things kind of not being all glued together.
Whoa. Do you see me looking at pictures of this?
Yes. Like, it's pretty wild, eh? Pretty wild.
I never even Googled it. I should have. That's crazy.
Well, I did it because I was like, well, we're going to talk about this, so we should probably check it out. But
I can't.
The first thing you notice about his room, let's go back to his room, is it's immaculate.
It's a mess.
It's immaculate. No, it's like kind of clean.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's almost like.
Like crazy.
Kind of crazy clean, like not really normal kind of clean.
Yeah.
And Booth at this point wants, he says to Brennan, to the victim's mother, he's like, we need to bring in an expert, you know, to check this out. And Brennan's like not getting it. She's like, an expert? What do you mean an expert? He's like, you know, an expert. And I honestly at first didn't know who he was talking about. And then I realized who he was talking about after. I was like, oh yeah, of course, you know.
Sweets is coming.
Sweets is coming. Sweets is going to check it out.
You know, but it's an expert. She's like, what?
Booth is so funny in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, man. He's so funny.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we're back at the lab. And we're in Hodgins' workspace. We can't really call it an office because he really just has this, like, desk area.
Oh, my God. You have to do this. I'm sorry.
So Hodgins found some coffee grounds and sea kelp in the treads of the victim's shoes. So they're like, okay, Cam makes that could be something he's looking into. Cam makes some off color remark, in my opinion, not appropriate. Calls the victim a giant toddler.
Oh,
he's like, oh, so okay, yeah. So he was, before the giant toddler was killed, he was just, you know, probably brewing coffee on the seashore. And then he, rather than being like, rather than playing, he does, he kind of plays along.
He doesn't play along.
No, he's kind of an ass. He's like, oh yeah, that's definitely a case closed, whatever. Anyway, he also found these tiny eggs that he wants to hatch. Yes,
the way he does that is so fucking rude. Like, he just goes, yeah, well, I guess the case is closed then. Like, he's just so awful.
It wasn't like a playing along funny kind of like, oh yeah, you're right, case is closed. Huh? It was like, fuck you, case is closed, I guess.
Like, so like a conversation ending.
Yeah.
Just like, so it was like demeaning almost the way he said it.
You know what, though? Mm-hmm. So not really much comes out of this other than him saying, okay, you know what? I need to hatch some eggs. But he hatched these eggs that I found because it could, by hatching them, it'll help me figure out what type of bug this is. And it could help figure out where this, where the body was killed, where the victim was killed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's being a total dick, though, around this commentary. And so Cam just stops him and is like, hey, buddy. I realize that you're all fucked up right now because you have all these issues with Zach and Angela or whatever. But yeah, this is a workplace and you have a problem with your attitude, so you need to check that.
Yeah.
And instead of him being like, sorry, boss, he's like, well, fuck you. If you want me to make a change, then you have to just let me do my job and back off, basically.
No, he was daring her to fire him. He's like, if you want to make a change, go ahead. Like, he's saying, like, go ahead, fire me. He doesn't care.
Just let me do my job in the meantime and go screw yourself.
And I would say, I would tell him to pack up his things in a banker's box and get a security guard and walk the fuck out of there. Give me your pass, your computer, and all this fucking equipment and go to hell.
The problem is he has this power because he's the donor that's helping run this facility. But no,
I don't think I don't
that doesn't impact Cam.
Would give a shit.
No. You're probably right.
They'd be like, oh, thank God. Hodgy wodgy. You got rid of that silly Hodgy job.
Wodgy.
Now you can come work on the board with me and Mummy, and we can do wonderful things and philanthropize all over the place. Hodgy.
And have tea and crumpets.
And have some tea and crumpets.
I guess we're just assuming that they're British. Rich British
they're
people.
They're not Australian. We know that.
Well, it's too difficult to do that accent, so we're not gonna go that direction.
Right, Hodgins.
Yeah, right.
Come on, Hodgins, let's go. Anyway, next, what do we have? Sweets going to the victims.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, we're talking about Bluey now, guys.
Sorry, we're talking about Bluey. Wayne's favorite show. Okay, so we're back in the kids, the victim's bedroom. Tell me all about this interaction, Kelly.
Yes. Sweets is in the bedroom. He's sort of handling and fondling these action figures that are in perfect, order, and they're absolutely spotless. He's looking over things. This is where Booth and Brennan shine. They are providing some colorful razzing to Sweets at this point, where they're going, they're making fun of him for admiring the action figures, and they're like, oh, you like those action figures, eh? You still living with your mommy? And he's like, well, no, actually, I have lived with a woman. And then Brennan says, oh yeah, is that woman your mommy? Like, it's just I'm sorry, I'm a terrible person, but Booth and Brennan are bullying Sweets like crazy. Sweets
is so funny.
All of it. Sweets is taking it all in stride. And I love it. I love the way they give him such a hard time. Like how Boo's like, oh, how's your mommy? And he's just like, you asked him to come here and help you. And they're like bullying him. It's so funny to me. Anyway, I just think it's really funny. Anyway, at the end of the day, Sweets determines that the victim has OCD and one of his patterns that he's used to has been completely messed with. So Sweets makes a rhetorical statement regarding the victim. Brennan says, oh, well, they can't really ask the victim because they're dead. And then Sweets points out how literal, oh my God, she's so fucking literal. Like, oh, it's annoying. Because it is kind of like, Brennan, get with the program, like I'm asking a rhetorical question. But she doesn't get rhetorical questions. Anyway, and then because of Sweets' sort of like reaction to her literalness, Booth again comes to her defense. It says, don't talk to her like that. And Brennan's like, fuck off, Booth. Like, I don't need you to do this all the time. Like, leave it alone. And then Sweets starts getting distracted by the dynamic between Booth and Brennan and how he's trying to fix everything. And she's like, yeah, but he won't let me help him with his bad back. And anyway, it's quite fun.
He's like, oh, and this is different. A change in your interpersonal behaviors.
So funny. So Sweets thinks that the victim was having a romantic or sexual relationship that probably was messing with things a little bit. And they figure out where evidence of the relationship is in the room because he would have hidden it from his mother.
Yeah.
And they go through his juvenile shoes that are from where? Korea or
Sri Lanka, I think.
Sri Lanka. The Sri Lankan shoes are specifically for that he orders for himself. They find a picture of a woman in a bathtub with like her name and anyway a bunch of shit on it, like her name and number and like sexual.
She's an older woman.
She is an older woman. I'd say she's about close to my age actually.
which is old, by the way. I just want you to know it's all old. During all this, Brennan is just absolutely like, she doesn't understand. She keeps calling the picture a masturbatory aid. And she's like, do you hide all of your masturbatory aids in your shoes? Or is this just a thing that you do? Anyway, it's just. And then Booth, not... says, Booth goes, well, wouldn't you like to know?
But it's because Sweets is like, she's kind of being left out because Sweets and him. Sweets and Emma are just like, check the shoes. They're both like, oh yeah, no, you should check the shoes. And she's like, what do you mean check the shoes? Is this like a normal thing? Like, oh my, is this God. Where boys hide their masturbatory materials?
So funny. But the way Booth goes, wouldn't you like to know? It just made me laugh so hard. He was so funny.
Well, we find, I guess the conclusion amongst all this hilarity is that this guy, so this victim is having a relationship with an older and distinguished woman.
Yes.
And he has, they think, severe OCD. The way that his room is organized, everything is put in different, like, they're all the shoes are together and perfectly lined up.
Oh no, honey.
All the figurines are perfectly lined up. It's like insane. It's crazy. Everything is grouped together nicely and lined up.
It's not normal. It's not normal.
So he definitely has serious OCD, although he was able to hide his masturbatory aid, and that didn't need to be lined up. So, you know,
and maybe now we're going to go talk to the masturbatory aid. Brittany, where are we going to the FBI next?
We're totally dehumanizing her. Okay.
No, we can't. That I really like this character. I liked her a lot. So
yeah, same.
Talk about Booth interviewing this woman from the picture.
So she's in the interrogation room, which is very interesting because, as Kelly pointed out, up until last season, the only reason we were using an interrogation room is if we had some idea that this person was guilty. But instead of just bringing them into this nice conference room. So we're in this interrogation room and Sweets and Brennan are looking on and they're talking about the sexual prowess of older women. And then Sweets is like, you know, the older woman that the woman I lived with that I was telling you guys about, she's real. And she was 26, an older woman. I was like, what? Sweets, you're not helping yourself right now. Anyway, we find out that they're having this little conversation. Booth is like, can you guys shut up? Like, he's pointing to his earpiece. Like, stop talking. I'm trying to conduct this interview. And so, yeah, so he's having this nice conversation with Kelly, Jared, the victim's girlfriend.
Yes.
And it sounds like they had a really nice relationship. She was saying that things were going really well, that he wanted to marry her and she was hoping that was something that was going to happen. And the way that they came to meet each other is she often helps her son at his florist and nursery shop, I guess it would be called. So he came in one day to buy an orchid for his mom. And he was so nervous and worried about the germs. And she helped him and showed him some kindness. And then she ended up asking him out for dinner, and then they ended up falling in love and having this wonderful relationship. So it was actually kind of sweet. He was trying to work on his OCD from what she was saying. He went to some hotel that she found out about. Anyway, they're thinking, Sweets was thinking, okay, maybe this is a red flag. Because she was talking about it all nicely. Like, oh, he was doing really well. Everything was going great. And he was thinking, oh, his OCD was bad and he was trying to work on it. And if he was trying to work on it, maybe she would feel somehow like he was pushing her away. Because he's, right. Like, it might threaten her.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she really... She seems so genuine. She talks about wanting the best for him. And I believe her. I don't for a second, not once in this episode did I think that she was the person who killed Jared.
Mm-mm.
I feel like I hit all the details in 100%. My roundabout way.
So yeah, he's attending workshops to help him overcome his OCD, and she seemed to really genuinely love him.
Yeah.
We're back at the lab, and here we go. Brennan and the new intern, Bray, are examining the bones of the victim, discussing various injuries, including a fracture in the victim's hand that he would have sustained when hitting someone with a right punch, a right hand. Brennan compliments Bray on his hard work. Now, I have to say something. Once we get to the crux of this scene, she compliments him on his work, and then she proceeds to ask him very... She just asks him if he's ever slept with an older woman. And she's standing close to him and she's asking him this. And he's looking at her like, he's basically, it took me a second too to figure out what was happening, because he thinks that she is propositioning him.
Oh yeah.
She thinks that he thinks that she wants him to sleep with her, and because she asks a question, and he says I don't think you're that much older than me, and she goes, oh, why is my age relevant? Like, she doesn't get what he's saying.
No.
And I just have to
then
say,
she leaves. Doesn't ask for clarification. Sorry,
he just leaves. You're absolutely right. But what I wanted to say was, there's a couple of times, a few times in this episode where characters, guest characters, and, well, other characters too. And the one we just saw, Kelly, she also did this. They're all making choices here that are interesting. Because when Brennan asks him the question, like when she complimented him on his work, the way she did it was kind of in a sexy way.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? Because she goes,
yeah,
nice work, Mr. Bray. Like, she was just, very good work, Mr. Bray. Because Emily Deschanel, come on, she's got that voice, like, you know,
yeah,
could melt penises all over the world. Anyway, she
melt penises
and vaginas. Okay, fine. She just does. She has a voice that's very sexy and sultry, right? And she says it in a way that's like, oh, nice work, Mr. Bray.
Like, tell, is that the Mr. ultimate Bray. Goal that someone tell told me, you? Mr. You really Bray. Melt my penis.
Melt my fucking penis. She says, tell me, Mr. Bray, have you ever considered having, have you ever had a relationship with an older woman? Anyway, just very sexy.
It was very sexy and very out of place. This is the scene I was texting you about.
I know. This is
when
the
you
fucking
get to this scene.
It was so dying. Weird.
I was crying. I was laughing so hard because I was like, oh
this,
my God, this poor
this
kid.
Intern guy, this intern. I don't know, man.
He's like, oh my God.
He's from another planet though. Like, that guy's like, okay, just fly under the radar, Bray. Shut the fuck up. I don't know.
Oh my God. Okay. We finally see Hodgins back in his element and he's feeling good. We finally see him happy because he's at a psychiatric facility. So he is with Zach, and they're just shooting the shit. They're just chatting, and they're having kind of a nice little convo. Yes. What?
No, keep going. I just have something to say.
So he's saying that Hodgins is saying to him, we're going to get you out of here, buddy. Like, we're going to get you out of here, and then you can be king again, like king of the lab. And anyway, I guess Hodgins gets this idea that maybe he should be talking to him about the case. So apparently he does something that I'm pretty sure is illegal. I'm pretty sure he's not allowed to do this, but he just gives him the case file. He's like, hey, made a copy of the case file. Do you want to hear about the case? It's pretty interesting. There's a body in 12 pieces, no head. He's like, oh yeah, so that's 13 pieces, eh? Anyway, so then they start talking about that, and he's saying that he's gonna work on it. He had given him a puzzle, I guess, when he got there, and he solved it right before he goes to chat. Anyway, so they obviously have been talking for quite a while at this point, and at no point has he mentioned until now that Angela and him are no longer together. And Zach is the one who brings it up, which is wild to me. And he says that Angela told him that they aren't together anymore. So Angela came by herself to visit Zach, which is wild. And so he says, I'm so sorry that things are going so badly for you. And Hodgins just starts laughing hysterically because he's like, my best friend is locked up in a psychiatric facility having to wear gloves because he blew up his own hands. And he's telling me he feels sorry for me. Like, how is my situation worse than yours? Yes, Kelly.
That's not what's funny, okay? What's funny is that these people are visiting him in this fucking place individually, A, B. Who has time for these visits? Honestly, like, it's a lot to, like, do this. And when on earth, like, when did fucking Zach, when were Zach and Hodgins best friends? And if they were best friends, wouldn't Hodgins have told Zach that he and Angela broke up?
That's a thing. I feel like they were best friends. And then no, they season three, nobody's a best they friend were. Here.
And we are not in high school. Nobody's got best friends anymore. Give me a break. This guy is basically, Zach has no ability. I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose him with anything, but he doesn't have empathy. He doesn't have, like, the thing that makes best friend material. You know what I mean? Like, he's not emotionally available.
He's a work friend.
He's not, they are not best friends. It's like Brendan and Angela are not best friends.
No, Brendan and Angela are definitely not best friends. And we'll talk about proof of that later in this episode.
And okay. Thank you. Yes. And the case file situation. I don't know what's going on. This is all bad. This is all bad to me. I find this all very, very terrible.
It makes no sense to me. All these, like, Cam would, that should be grounds to fire him. I like, would Cam think should when have, she finds like,
this
out.
This is crazy. This is crazy. This is crazy.
It's crazy. They probably have to go through huge hoops just to be able to work there. To be involved in FBI cases and stuff. In FBI it's wild. Cases?
And they're just handing off case files to a guy that was, who was charged by, like, found guilty by the FBI or whatever it's apprehended. Yeah. I don't know what the word is.
You want to talk about the next scene where we
I'll talk about the next scene. So we
this is the one that is very similar vibes, I think. Is this the one you were talking about that's similar vibes to that other episode? Okay. Yeah.
Yes. To Death in the Saddle.
Death in the Saddle, that's what it's called.
So after the ridiculous scene at the loony bin where Hodgins and Zach are bonding over math problems and case files, we have Booth and Brennan arriving at a hotel where there are a bunch of people in their underwear who are being coaxed by some sort of facilitator to put mud all over their bodies. So Booth and Brennan are just standing there observing this. This is another thing that this facilitator this facilitator needs to get a handle on who can walk freely into a room with people in their underwear. I mean, I know Booth and Brennan can be trusted, but come on, man. Just like they walked into the horseplay situation in the hotel.
Yes, that's exactly why it reminded me. Yeah, they're like, hey, there's nothing normal about this experience. It's like, put this mud on your body. Brr.
Anyway, the people putting mud on their bodies are really grossed out doing that. Like, they're all, like, weirded out. And Brennan points out that the facilitator has a black eye. And she explains to Booth that that's called, that he calls that a shiner. Did you know that? Like, anyway. And Booth is like, why? I know it's a fucking black eye. Like, I know it's a shiner. What are you talking about? And I just think it's really funny when women mansplain things to men and how men are just so, like, unbelievably insulted whenever a woman explains something to them that they already know.
Yeah.
But men do it constantly.
All the time. Literally
constantly.
All the time.
They do that, and they also take credit for things that you told them to do 10 years ago. Anyway.
It's true.
Sorry. I think I have a resentment. I should work on that. Anyway.
Preach.
Regardless, Booth interrupts this session. this hilarious mud session. After one of the participants runs away in fear and anxiety, and they want to talk with this facilitator dude. I don't know his name. I just keep calling him the facilitator. They get him isolated.
Amirian?
Amirian. Anyway, it doesn't. It's irrelevant. They get him isolated. Yes. So they isolate him away. Okay. So then they, Brittany, I'm going to talk now. Okay.
Yes. Stop. I'll stop. I'm stopping. Go, go.
She's stopping now. Okay. So the facilitator is isolated from everybody and he's talking with Booth and Brennan. And at first he's not very forthcoming, but then he eventually, once he finds out that Jared is dead, he coughs up that Jared was one of his star pupils. He was involved a lot with the group and he did all kinds of, he was making a lot of progress. And then Booth and Brennan ask about the black eye that the guy has. And apparently people punch him all the time because they're so anxious and scared of all the shit that he gets them to do. But then this is my favorite. I don't know. You told me who the writer was. It was the same guy as Death in the Saddle and stuff, right?
Yeah.
The same person. This is so funny to me when the facilitator talks about some of the tests that he puts the OCD. This is a workshop that he does to help people with OCD overcome their compulsions by making them do stuff that grosses them out. Like that's very germy. And he mentions a couple of the things he makes them do. There's like one with the toilet where they put a mint in the toilet and they have to go get the mint and put it in their mouth. Ugh. And then he makes them lick the floor with their tongue. Oh my God. It's so funny. It's so funny. Like, I just think it's really clever writing. And I love this color that they put in, like just these little random things that don't mean anything, but they're so funny. So he's in the middle of talking about all the different tests they do. And Ralph, the guy who ran away because he was scared to put mud on his body, comes back, interrupts them, and the facilitator says, "It's okay, we'll try next week, don't worry about it." Then Ralph says that he killed Jared. He confesses to Booth and Brennan right there that he did it.
"Please sterilize your handcuffs before you take me in."
Yeah, he says, "Please sterilize your handcuffs before you cuff me." That's so funny. Like, oh, little things like deeds like that are, it's worth it. It makes it all worthwhile.
Oh, this whole episode. There's little pieces all throughout the whole episode. It's so great.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. Well, where are we now? We're back at the FBI.
Back at the FBI.
Da, 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 da. So Sweets is interrogating. They've chosen, much to Brennan's confusion, Booth has decided that the best person to interrogate Ralph, our supposed killer, is for Sweets to talk to him. And it becomes obvious very quickly that Ralph did not actually kill our victim. Instead, he felt like he killed him because he did his routine out of order. He's supposed to eat at exactly a specific time according to that particular watch that he's wearing. Then his professor told him, "Okay, don't eat exactly then. Wait 45 minutes. And Jared was sitting beside him. And then because he waited until 9 instead of 8:14 to eat, then later that day, Jared died because of him. So that was the rationale behind him thinking that he killed him. Yeah, so they have to go back to the drawing board. Obviously, this guy did not kill him. Very sweet. Very sweet guy.
Booth is so like, "Oh, man, now we got to go keep looking." It's so funny.
They had hoped Booth that this was going to be a slam dunk. Oh, yeah.
"Oh, man, we got to keep looking." It's so funny.
Well, they get this. They do. It's not all is lost. Ralph does mention that after he had breakfast with him, after he had breakfast with the victim, he had gone to the coffee bar in the lobby to get a coffee. And Hodgins, if you remember a few scenes ago, was talking about how he found coffee grounds and sea kelp in the treads of the victim's shoes. So, coffee shop? Coffee?
Perhaps. So, Booth and Brennan decide to go back to where they do the workshops to talk to the guy who runs the coffee shop. to see if they knew or recognized Jared. I just have to say, this is another instance where we have a person making a choice in their acting moment on the show, and I commend them for it. I commend everyone in this episode for making the choices they did. This guy, sorry, the whole scene is so crazy, and it made me laugh so hard because, is there a ghost behind me? Did you see anything fucking move back there?
I did. I think okay. I did.
That's insane.
The ghost has returned.
There's a ghost in the fucking room, everybody. I don't know if you knew this about my house. Anyway, this guy at the coffee shop is the most New York guy ever.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Like, hey, what's going on? Have a coffee. He's like talking like this the whole time. Yeah, so he and Jarrett did have an altercation. They did kind of, he pushed him, blah, 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 because he gets annoyed. This coffee guy from New York, he's a New York coffee guy. He got really annoyed because the OCD people, they're such a pain in the ass. Is it? It's just so, you can't stand these OCD types because he has to constantly make different coffees because they're all like, don't touch this and do that, and he has to throw it all away. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, he and Jared had an altercation, yes, but then Jared came back and apologized to the guy and shook his hand without wearing a rubber glove, nothing, or using like alcohol to clean his hands afterwards. So that was like, again, another indication that Jared's, the workshops he was attending to help him with his OCD were working. I just, yeah. This New York guy is so funny. It's.
he calls the people with OCD. He's like, these OCDC people, they're all the same.
These OCDC people, they're all the same. I'm losing money. I'm going to go bankrupt over here. It's like, oh my God, who is this guy? He made me laugh so hard. I mean, the whole thing is like, this guy's from New York, I guess. And
yeah.
And he doesn't want not. These OCD people to come become his main clientele because he says, don't tell everybody that it works because they're going to come back here. It's like, oh my God.
I need to look
Rodney up. Rodney Dangerfield.
Well, we're talking about the next scene. I'm going to look up where this guy was born. Like, was he's born in
so
Toronto?
Funny. Oh no, he's God. Probably from like North Dakota or something.
Somewhere. But
I hope
he's British.
In here because he's so, oh my God, wouldn't that be funny if he was fucking British?
Oh my God. So yeah, they have this revelation, like you said, they have this revelation, like, oh wow. Okay, so this guy, the methods are actually working. And he's like, oh God, stop, like, be quiet. Don't say that too loud. I don't need this to be the coffee mecca for the phobics.
Yeah, he doesn't want the phobics over here. Get out of here.
Do you want to talk about Wendell and Angela? Oh God.
There he is. His name is, okay, the actor's name was from New York. His name is Ronobir Lahiri. He doesn't have a name. He's just called the barista.
Yeah.
And
well, he's been in a lot.
Details. He's been in tons of shit. Are you kidding me? This guy works. Ronobir Lahiri. Where is he from? Ronobir Lahiri. There he is, right there. Countless television shows and films, trained as an actor at Yale University, has been on Damn. Broadway and the West End and the title of The King and I. Wow. We're learning a lot about our barista here today. Oh my God. There's a guy with the same name who plays a sitar. Oh, I think it's the same guy.
I think it might be the same guy.
You think, oh my God, he plays sitar.
I think it is.
He's like a musician.
Yeah, talks about how he was in Bones.
Oh my God. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I love learning about this guy. Okay.
He lives in LA.
Yeah. Trained as a teenager on Indian classical sitar in Calcutta, India, under Sri Deepak Chaudhuri, a preeminent disciple of Ravi Shankar. Wow.
Wait, in Calcutta, India.
Calcutta, yeah.
So is he from India? He was born in India then, maybe?
No, he was there as a teenager.
Huh.
But it doesn't say where he was born. I'm just looking. Yeah, he lives in LA. You're right. He's played with the Blue Man Group. Look at this.
You guys,
we're learning so much about Rona Beer.
I like it.
He's a musician, a sitarist. Do you know how hard it is to play a sitar?
Oh my God, probably so hard.
Oh my God. Well, you're a musician, you know. I'm gonna have to check out his music. You know what, guys? I might throw some Rona Beer Lahiri music on at the end of this episode.
I like it.
In celebration.
Wow. This is pretty cool. Wow.
I love learning about these people. This is awesome. He is like a working act. He works all the time. Anyway, that was our little what's that called? Our interlude about Rona Beer Lahiri. Check it out, guys. Maybe we should look him up Spotify and play one of his songs. Hold on.
Ooh, do you think his songs are probably on Spotify.
Rona Beer Lahiri. Lahiri. Here he is, artist. Krishna's Lament, Wandering in the Evening. Let's see what we got here. To India with Love. What do you think?
We're going to start following him on Instagram.
We have to. Come get your coffee over here. Don't forget your coffee. Watch out for these OCDCP people. You mad?
Watch out for the OCDC people.
I just thought it was funny to just talk like a New Yorker while that music was playing. Okay.
I like it.
All right, that was our little moment of Zen here.
I just added him to Instagram.
Oh, it's so cool. So cool. We love you, Rona Beer.
That was awesome. Okay. Shall we move on to talk about...
Yes, I'm sorry. Here we are. Where
are you sorry? It was so interesting.
Okay, this scene we could just skip over. I hate it.
Okay, so I'll talk about it then. So poor Wendell is having to experience a confrontation from Angela because Angela's like, hey, like, how's it going? He's like, you said that I could come to you with any question and I owe people money. And I'm like, oh my God, buddy, like, come on strong. What is going on? Who do you owe money to? She's having the same reaction. Like, oh, okay. What, like, what are you talking about? And he's going off about how he needs this job and he's got to, like, he owes people money and he's got to, like, he's got to make this job work. But what will he get fired if he can't satisfy Dr. Brennan? And Angela's like, what is happening right now? And then he starts asking if Zach was Brennan's boy toy. And she's like, okay, stop right now. Whatever you think that Brennan said to you, she did not say to you. You need to come up with some alternative explanation for what you think happened. And you're insane. Like, deal with it. Glad we talked about this. Moving on. Leaves him just standing there like, I don't have any experience with older women. Hey, this poor guy. And Kelly is having none of this. She's like, this is the worst.
I'm writing notes because I just want to say you know what? There's a reason she and Hudgens broke up. She's a terrible communicator. And I think that, like, aren't they all working on the same fucking case? Like, seriously?
Yeah.
And like you said, she's Brennan's best friend.
BFFs.
So why can't Angela say, oh yeah, that's just her. That's because of this, that, and the other. Like, put it together. Put it together, people.
Yeah. Well,
I was done. Stupid.
Well, we will move on. Angela is still with us. And she's talking to Cam.
Yes.
Cam's trying to find out if they got anything off the victim's cell phone, which, why is Angela looking at the cell phone? Don't they have people for this at the FBI? Anyway.
The FBI, yes.
Kind of weird. But anyway, so she finds out, yeah, she did get a hit off the phone. He only called one number.
Yeah.
For 30 days at the exact same time every day. Yes. And he was calling Forward Retro Publishing. Mm-hmm. And that is the publisher that dropped him after his second book and said that they never wanted to talk to him again. So that is a rather interesting development in the case, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they bring in this guy, Tushman, and I need you to talk about him because I found him just absolutely repulsive. Again.
I'll just confirm, Rona Bir Lahiri is from India, but I think he lived or grew up in New York City. So, okay. I'll give him that. I'll give him the coffee over here kind of stuff. It's fine.
I love it.
Now we're going to talk about another actor that made some choices because I don't know who is dressing these people. Did he show up wearing this outfit? Like, was he wearing the toque / Americans call them beanies, but in Canada, I'm wearing one right now. It's toque, spelled T-O-Q-U-E. Is it T-O-U-Q-U-E or T-O-Q-U-E?
T-O-Q-U-E.
Just a T-O-Q-U-E. I got little bit worried there for a second. So he's wearing a toque. He's wearing a lot of jewelry. He's wearing these glasses that remind me, I was trying to think what they reminded me of, and I think it was Bono from U2 wore glasses that were kind of like this, right?
The whole look is infuriating to me.
It's really bad, and he has facial hair that's not nice, and his name is Tushman, which is, in French, the word for touch is touche. Like, seriously, it's so, what's the word? On the nose. This guy, and I just, he's apparently a publisher of books, fine. He's being interviewed in the interrogation room. You're right, we are doing a lot of interviews in the interrogation room, right? There's too much going on. He's like a cartoon character. He's very like, hey, you, like, he's slimy and shady and kind
it's
of
too
like,
much.
He's a douchebag, and he's saying to Brennan, like, because they had, we didn't talk about this earlier, but Jared is a published author, a sci-fi author as well, our victim. And what the publishing company had decided to do, because Jared's OCD was so debilitating, and I think perhaps he wasn't, I don't know if he wasn't attractive or like something marketable, I don't know. So the publishing company made a decision to hire an actor to portray Jared on the road and sign copies of his books and all that stuff. And then apparently the person who played him became a writer himself and got published, and he was quite good. So the publisher decided to ditch Jared altogether and then just go with this new guy, which is very strange, weird. I don't know that this is necessarily... like, this guy, the depiction of the publisher, Tushman, I just don't imagine publishers are like this. Like, I always imagine them being very kind of scholarly and intellectual and, you know, kind
exactly. of. Exactly. I didn't believe it. And honestly, and this is completely unrealistic, but I was like, is this Jared in disguise? And Jared's not actually dead? And I was like, wait, no, I have a body.
So weird, right? And then he says to Brennan, to prove about the whole actor playing Jared thing on the back of the cover, he says, well, your full picture's on the back of your books because you're hot, basically. You're a hot chick who does science. Booth then uses this opportunity to come to Brennan's rescue again for being insulted, and he's defending her against this guy calling her a chick, and of course she's taking umbrage with that, of course. And Brennan realizes, like, he tells her that she said, oh, yes, well, my picture's on the back of the cover because I'm a very good writer. And he says, well, you know, you're okay. Like, he doesn't, like, it's the most cutting thing anyone could say to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's so it's like, I was like clutching my pearls. I was like, oh my God, you didn't say that to her. That's like devastating to hear that. Like, I know that I'm 51 years old and I'm 200 pounds and I'm not that attractive and nobody looks at me anymore, but don't tell me that. Don't tell me.
You are way too hard on yourself, Kelly. You're a looker. You are making all the penises melt.
Melts. They're melting all around me.
Oh my God. I'm never going to not say that. That's so awesome. Right.
Okay. Anyway. Can we...
Sorry. Go on. And then I have a comment about Mr. Tushman. I'll just finish this up by saying
that Jared apparently did punch him after he got upset because he never like returned his calls or whatever, because he wanted to be published by this guy. But then the publisher decided to take him on again as a writer because he punched him. He said, "You punched me without a glove on." Like, it, this stuff's like, he's getting over his OCD. It's great. I'll be able to put him on tour. It'll be wonderful. It'll be like a redemption story. It'll be awesome. But then he died. He's like, now he's dead. I would have made so much money. Yeah. The story would have been great. So
we're kind of like, okay, even though this guy's douchey, he probably didn't do it. Yeah. The actor that plays this character, his name is Matt Doherty. Yes. Who, he was a very, very famous child actor.
Okay.
He was in the Mighty Ducks, all of the Mighty Ducks movies. He was in Home Alone.
Right.
He was in all the good child actor movies.
Right.
Mainly just the two I just described. And then more recent, so he's continued to do some acting, but not in significant roles, just an episode here or there every few years. But it's just, I found that interesting. I wonder how much money he makes off of, like, what his net worth is from the Mighty Ducks movies.
Good question. Matt Doherty. Let's look it up.
Net worth.
Doherty.
£3.5 million. Oh, there's someone else.
Wrong guy.
Sorry, wrong guy. That's the sports guy.
Matt Doherty. Actor.
Anyway, he is... I just found that kind of interesting.
Well, it depends on what kind of a deal he got from what his agent managed to get him, because...
Which probably isn't much because he was a kid.
Well, unless his parents were savvy enough to get a proper, you know?
Yeah, true. Okay, well, we talked about the Tushman. We're kind of ruling him out because our victim was able to punch him. So that's good for him. Okay. So this is the final straw. Cam walks in to Hodgins' workstation and Cam is like, "Dr. Hodgins, I need your attention." And he's like, "Shh, like, shut up. I need to watch my egg hatch." And she's like, "Oh, like, wait, is that something you need quiet for?" And no, he does not need quiet for that. He's just being a dick. So anyway.
No, he says, "Oh no, I just did that so you wouldn't talk."
Yeah, just wanted you to stop talking. So then she looks at him. She's like, "Okay, Dr. Hodgins." She's not calling him Jack. She's not calling him Hodgins. Dr. Hodgins.
Yeah.
"How's about we say you found the line?" I love the way that Cam like puts her foot down and doesn't let him treat her that way.
Yep. You found the line. This is the boundary. That's enough.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, and he ignores that. And he says, "Oh, look, this thing hatched. This gives me a good idea of where Jared Addison was murdered. Oh, look, the two of them figure out that his girlfriend worked in a nursery. It would appear based on where the fly was, the type of fly it is, that it's quite likely that the murder happened at that nursery. Possibly." Okay, done. Then Hodgins comes back and is like, "Listen, I'm having a really hard time. I'm not trying to be difficult with you. I cannot. I don't have the mental space to be able to move into Zach's space. I don't have the mental capacity.
He didn't say that, did he?
I hope you understand. Yes, he does. He says, hey, Dr. Saroyan, I'm not moving into Zach's space. I'm not being difficult. I can't do it. I hope you understand. And she says, I understand. I thought you being the one who moved in there would be easiest for Zach. And Hodgen says, well, if he were a normal human, that might be true. And then they kind of laugh about it.
Who cares what's easy for Zach, though? I don't understand this thing where they're trying to be nice to Zach or his memory or whatever. Well, I'm just saying, like there's ways to like remember, but I don't know why they're worrying about what Zach thinks about Hodgins being in his workspace.
Yeah. I think they're just trying to play up the fact that Hodgins is having this really hard time. Which,
whatever.
Like Cam said, I can respect that, but your job is your job and you need to take it seriously and you need to be respectful. Honey,
everybody's having a hard time. Can I say that? Like, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Anyway, did we talk about the fly?
We talked about the fly. So they're going to direct Booth and Brennan to look at the nursery that the, that the girlfriend worked at. Okay. So, does Angela know that Sweets was at the Royal Diner and that's how she discovered that she could stalk him? Do you want to talk about the scene or do you want me to?
Okay, whatever. Angela interrupts Sweets while he's eating his friggin' lunch at the Royal Diner to bitch at him about how the new intern's crazy and how, you know, he thinks that Brennan wants to sleep with him. And then Sweets has to explain to her, Brennan's best friend, working on the same case.
This is where I said, I was like, aren't they best friends? How does she not know this?
So Sweets has to mansplain Brennan to her and say, okay, there's an older woman. She's probably just anthropologically trying to figure out like what everyone's experience is. Like she's always doing research, this girl.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then Angela basically says, this is my favorite. I like Sweets in this moment because she accuses Sweets of breaking her and Hodgins up. Like it was his fault. And Sweets isn't taking any of her shit.
Oh no.
And he slaps back at her and says, that has nothing to do with me. Like it's not my fault at all.
I think you know that. He finishes off with, and I was like, bam, mic drop.
Yeah.
Kid who we thought was all insecure or like maybe wasn't, to me Sweets doesn't come across, because normally his interactions are with Bones and Brennan and Bones and Booth, sorry, and so to me he comes across a bit more passive, but in this moment it was like
okay, what's Angela's problem with Sweets? I don't get it. Like what did he do to her? Like seriously. And also, this guy is more educated than most of the people around, except for him and Brennan are probably equal in the amount of fucking education they have. Like, have some respect. God.
Yeah. Then she just walks off. I was like, screw you, Angela. Mm-mm. Poor Hodgins, not Hodgins, poor Sweets is now sitting there like, I'm eating my lunch and I feel like crap.
I'm not going to say poor Hodgins.
No.
Where do we go to next?
We're gonna go to the nursery next, and Booth and Brennan go and they talk to the girlfriend's son, who is the owner of this nursery. The nursery not being for children, but being for plants, just in case we need to clarify that. So it seemed important. So he uses coffee as fertilizer, and you know how they figure that out? Because Brennan decides to reach down into the compost and lick it. She licks it. And yes.
Which means Brennan doesn't have OCD, I guess, eh?
I guess not. But it has sea kelp and coffee grounds. So that's what was in the victim's shoes. So, okay. Other than the fly, this is another thing that would bring attention to this scene. So it becomes very obvious very quickly that the son of the girlfriend of the victim is not a fan of Jared. He was not a fan. Jared actually came to ask him for his permission to marry his mother, and he straight up said no. He said, no way, not a chance. Brennan notices off in the corner of her eye that there's some shovels that are hung up, and there's a ton of fly activity around the shovels. And so she's going, oh shit, I think I need to test this shovel. So she turns to this guy and the son, and she's like, I'm going to test the shovel now. If there's blood, this will be pink. And then so she swabs this shovel and sticks it in this liquid. And sure enough, 3 milliseconds later, it is Pepto-Bismol colored, but brighter, like the box of the Pepto-Bismol. Yeah. And so she's like, oh shit, son of girlfriend, we have a problem. And so he's like, oh shit, I guess I gotta go get a lawyer. And he doesn't deny it, which was interesting. He doesn't deny, because she says, oh, because he's like, what does the pink mean? She says, oh, that means that you caved in
Jared's skull. Hodgins says it. Hodgins is like, oh, sorry, that means Hodgins you caved says in it. The guy's head.
Yeah. And he doesn't deny it.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, okay, I guess I'm coming down to the...
I gotta go do this now.
Yeah, great.
Meanwhile, he's trying to run a small business. He probably needs to make a certain number of sales every day. A certain number of sales every day in order to break even. You know this, Brittany. People have to do this all the time. Stick it to
the man.
And now he's got to, you know, lock up shop and go downtown and go to the FBI office and be interrogated.
Ugh. Yeah. Poor guy. Unless he killed him, then not poor guy. But we'll find out.
Then not poor guy, exactly.
Okay. Do you want me to talk about Angela and Wendell?
Yes, please. I can't do this. I can't do it.
So Angela goes and talks to Wendell because Sweet said, listen, like in that interaction, he said, listen, like you obviously completely misunderstood. And now you've told Wendell that he's an insane person. So you need to go and make it right. And you need to go and tell Wendell that you were wrong. So she goes to talk to Wendell and he's standing on some like walkway upstairs at the lab, and he's got a cigarette in his mouth and it's not lit, and it's just, it's a very awkward interaction. And he's like, I can't risk having sex with my boss, but I have debts. And she's like, listen, I don't know what mob situation you've got yourself into. And he's like, wait, what are you talking about? It's not the mob. Like all these people from my community raised money to make sure that I could have the best education, and I feel obligated. I feel I want to show them that they made the right decision and that I'm going to pay them back. They're hardworking people and I really want to pay them back. And she's like, oh. And he's like, oh, and also I don't smoke. Yes, Kelly.
Oh, no, just the whole mob thing is interesting, because before, earlier when he talked about the victim's fingers being burnt off, and when that was mentioned, he said, oh, people do that to conceal their identities. That's where I was like, oh, maybe that's the thread that Angela's like sort of weaving. Like she's like, oh, he mentioned that earlier. Maybe he's got a mob situation happening.
And even the injury, like the boxing injury. It's like, I punch people and I burn their fingertips off.
I know. So,
anyway, they laugh
coffee
it
guys
off.
From New York.
From New York. I love it. Mm, so they end up having it. They end up leaving each other on a pretty good, like, field. She's saying that he says, I don't really get what's going on here. It's, I do want to work here, but it's like a minefield and I'm going to step in the wrong direction. And she's saying, listen, like, yes, it takes some getting used to, but like, it is what it is, basically. Mm. There's a really sweet moment here, although it's with a cigarette, I don't condone smoking, but or support smoking. But so he has this cigarette that he keeps, and when he needs to think and get in the right mindset and work through a problem, then he puts the cigarette in his mouth and tries to put himself in the mind of his dad, because his dad used to smoke. But then his dad died of lung cancer, so he doesn't actually smoke. So that's an important detail. But
this is like, we've got so much backstory on this character. Like, it's insane. Like, he's
He was a boxer. He was put through school by his neighborhood. He, his father's dead. Like, there's like all these things we know about him.
Lots going on.
And he's willing to sleep with Brennan to keep a job, I guess.
Willing, almost.
As if he would say no.
I don't know if I could do it.
As if he'd say no. Come on.
I'll do it for my neighborhood. But he's...
Take one for the team, Bray.
I'll take one for the team. this is the second intern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Clark was the other who is going, you people are fucked.
You guys are like, fucking weird.
What is going
on
here?
And then Daisy? Daisy was too weird?
Yeah, Daisy, that's where they draw the line.
Daisy's weird. But this guy, he's like, you guys are weird.
Poor Daisy.
Okay. Poor Daisy.
Poor Daisy. Anyway, we have...
This is crazy.
Yes. Sorry, I just scrolled. Right,
so here we are.
So we're still in the lab.
We're back. We're still in the lab. Cam's checking out the lab results on the stuff they found on the shovel in the nursery. Turns out that the pink that they found after using the, was it phthalothalene or whatever it's called?
Yeah.
Picks up on, yes, blood and all that stuff. But it also is affected by potato proteins. And it seems that this shovel was in contact with potato proteins. So... Booth, Brendan, Cam, and Angela. Hodgins is there as well. And the intern are all talking on the platform, I think, about, you know, where they're going to go next with the evidence, like what they have to do next to sort of figure this out. Because they're feeling very lost without the head. They feel like if they had the head, they'd be able to figure everything out. I don't know that that's necessarily true.
I feel like they don't find that much stuff on the skull usually, but I guess they would know how he was.
Well, they'd know the weapon or what was used to cut his head off, maybe. And the shovel, they could detect like where it was manufactured. I don't know. Regardless,
I don't know.
Everyone is there. And then out of the blue, someone says, I know where to find the head. That's what he says.
No, wait, not until. Right before that, Hodgins is like, Wendell must have missed something. And I wish that Zach were here because he wouldn't have missed something. And Booth is like, get over it. Zach is not coming back. What is your problem? Anyway, sorry, go on.
Which all leads to basically Zach arriving out of the blue wearing his prison white saying, I know where the head is. He solved the crime. And everybody is absolutely, I love the individual reactions to this arrival. Zach is there. I don't know what he's carrying with him, but he's wearing this white jumpsuit. And Brendan, Hodgins, and Angela are so happy to see this guy. They're like all excited. Zach is here, like, Zach, yay! Cam and Booth are like, hold the phone. What the fuck? You escaped from prison? Like, what the hell? I think Sweets is there too, isn't he? Yeah, everybody's there. Gang's all there. So Brennan, Hodgins, and Angela run down to greet him. They're hugging him. They're so happy. Brennan's so excited to see him. She's squeezing his arm super tight. He's like, oh my God, you're hurting me. And Booth is like, okay, trying to get control of the situation. He's a man of the law. He's like, okay, Zach, you're with us. Like, you can't get out of leave our sight. This is crazy. Crazy. So it turns out the swipey card that Sweets used was foreshadowing because Zach used the magnetic strip or something on his own library card. To swipe and get the hell out. Isn't that funny?
Which is crazy. This guy is brilliant, obviously.
Yeah, but I've never known Zach to be like that. Like sneaky.
I wouldn't have thought that he would sneak out of prison. I would have thought that he would have just called and been like, hey, do you guys want to know how to solve the crime? Because I figured it all out. And Wendell sucks.
Right, so tell me how he solved it.
Okay. This is so interesting. I don't know about you, but I love this scene. Yeah. So Zach is talking with Booth and Brennan, and he's saying, I got it all figured out. Everything in his room is organized in sets of 12. Everything in the victim's rooms. So, which we kind of talked about before. Everything is grouped by the dozen. So sets of 12 has to be a manifestation of the OCD. But then but Zach looked through all of his novels, and there's no mention of any numbers at all. His OCD issue is with germs and fear of germs. So he's going, okay, one second. They live at 12 Kindergarten Street. That has 12 letters. His name has 12 letters. All these everything in the garden is in sets of 12. So wait a minute. It's his mother that has OCD as well. 12 body parts, 12 everything, not counting the head. So when they saw the incomplete marks on the bones, the saw marks, it was they're saying the mother is the one who killed him, which is so sad. And he says all these things in this garden are sets of 12, except for you're gonna find the head right here. And he points to this planter that's kind of just in the middle of the property, this bird bath. And oh my god, I was just like, I felt so sad. I felt so sad for the mother.
It makes your stomach just sink. It was terrible. Yeah. But anyway, this next part. Sorry.
Well, the montage you're talking about? Well, before I just realized, I forgot something. So Sweets comes in and they have this thing like, what the fuck, Zach? Are you for real? You used me to escape. Also, the rationale is that the mother, she has intense, severe OCD. But the son, she's seeing the son is finding himself taking control of his life and getting out of these patterns of OCD. And he was ready to leave her house. He had this girlfriend that he wanted to propose to. His OCD was getting better. So she basically suffered a psychotic break is the theory, and then murdered her son.
Wow. That's severe OCD, honey. Like, you need to be medicated and maybe institutionalized for that.
Yeah. Okay, talk about the montage.
All right, montage time. So yeah, we're going to go to the woman's garden and we're going to dig up Zach's head. Keeping in mind that we opened, like not open, but when we met this woman, she was literally gardening and moving the paving stones. So like, did she literally just bury the head in the box? Like, it's...
Oh my God. I'm going to go back to the beginning of the episode right now while we chat about this.
Like, they just strolled up on her gardening, moving the stones around. And I was like, wow, was she like literally just finishing this job? Like, wow. And she acted like, if that's the case, she's a freaking psycho.
Oh, she's a psycho. And she obviously had some big convoluted reason she didn't report him missing. But now it's very obvious that she didn't report him missing because she's the one who killed him. Anyway,
I'm looking so crazy.
Up the beginning of this
so
episode.
So they find
while we're
the head in the garden in a box with the name on it. Fine. But while they're doing all this, we have this insane montage where they're switching between digging up the head and then and also alternatively, we have Hodgins, Angela, Cam, and Zach sitting at the Royal Diner enjoying like a haha chuckle fun time together.
Yeah.
And
Angela and Hodgins together is like, what?
During this whole episode, I'm writing down, I'm making notes. I'm going, Zach is a murderer. He's a murderer. And they're just sitting there like going, ha ha ha, ha, hee, hee, ha, 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 like they're just having this time at the diner.
He's an escaped murderer.
And I just want to say, if he's actually in a psychiatric facility, he would be on so many fucking antipsychotic drugs.
Oh, yeah.
That he would be unrecognizable, A, B. Yeah.
he could be like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest level drug taking. Do you know what that movie is? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
when I say that?
I do. Okay, good. I do know that one.
Like this level of incoherent, unaware level of drugs that he would be on.
And they would be bringing him his medication every so many like number of every hours.
6 hours or whatever. Exactly.
Crazy. So they would realize anyway. He's gone very easily.
So they find the head in the garden. They open the box. What's in the box? So they find the fucking head in the box. And then... Have you seen that movie yet? Oh, yes. You're not a horror movie girl. Have you
Unfortunately seen not. But I know what you're talking about, though.
Okay, it's Seven. Okay, guys, get it. Don't get it twisted. So they find the head in the box. Fine. And then because they find it, they call up Sweets, who's waiting at the prison to escort with Booth, escort Zach back to the prison. So Sweets is waiting impatiently for the call. And then Cam gets the call. So Zach's at the diner with everybody. And he's like, I guess I gotta go now. And then they suddenly stop their ha ha hee hee ho hey, hey. They stop their fucking laughing. And they go, oh, it's sad time. Zach has sad to go time. Back. Zach's gonna get strapped to a fucking bed. Like, whatever, guys. So then Booth drives Zach back to the prison. They meet up with Sweets. And Booth goes, okay, you take him in, Sweets, you're fine. Then Sweets is like, wait a minute. You can't leave me alone with a murderer. He thinks that Zach's going to like overpower him and kill him. And Booth starts laughing. He's like, no, you're fine.
Yeah.
And then Booth drives away. I hope Sweets has his own car. Anyway, so Booth drives away. And this is when we learn from Zach at this moment in time. Zach tells us that he didn't actually murder the lobbyist.
Thank God, though, that they have this clarification, because if you can clearly see the kid's face at the end of that episode. And we talked about that when we talked about that episode, and we were like, this doesn't look like Zach.
No.
So it's nice that they provided this clarification that he didn't actually commit the murder. That was another apprentice. But Zach's concern is he didn't admit to not murdering him, because if the master had asked him to murder someone, he thinks he would have done it.
But also Zach doesn't. So then Sweets is really like, oh, let's rectify this. Right. He wants everybody to know that Zach didn't kill the guy. He's trying to get the ball rolling on like getting this reverse or whatever. But then Zach's like, yeah, don't do that. Because what's going to happen is that he's going to be found guilty of accessory to murder, which means that he would be sent to regular prison, which is more terrifying than psychiatric prison.
Yeah.
And I'm with Zach. I say, okay, stay in the facility where they give you drugs and you can watch TV.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of answer, like get case files.
Just chill.
No, just chill out. Don't chill go out and
have all your friends like, visit.
It's terrible.
Break you out every so often.
Yeah, exactly.
Sweet. This is an interesting moment for Sweets, because Sweets has been really struggling with this case with Zach. Is all the interviews he says to him in this moment, I knew you didn't commit the murder. This is exactly the piece that I needed to figure out, because all these times we're having these conversations and I'm thinking, there's no way that Zach committed a murder. Like, it's totally different to actually commit a murder and to think that you could do it. It's not the same. So I was like, oh man.
So to be continued on this storyline, right? Like maybe we'll revisit. Obviously, we're going to maybe go back to it. I mean, I can't imagine that they wouldn't. But I do want to talk about this next piece, because there's something that Booth says that made me laugh out loud. So loud. Because we go back at the lab Booth pops into Brendan's office. He does this, like, he kind of pops in and goes, hey, like, he's just all full of beans. And Brennan is in the middle of getting rid of her novel that she's writing, her newest novel. And he's like watching her toss the manuscript, the paper, hard copy manuscript in the garbage. And he's like, did you delete the soft copy? Did you take it off your computer? And she goes, yeah, I deleted it. And he's like, no, stop it, stop it, stop it. So he grabs her novel. He's like, okay, stop doing that. Stop doing that. And then Brennan tells him that she doesn't want to be known as a sexy scientist. Like she's really affected by what that publisher guy said. Because he said, oh, you know, your writing's okay, but you're just more like a sexy science chick. And Booth goes, this is my favorite, one of two things he says. He goes, don't listen to that guy. He's a douchebag. Did you see the glasses he was wearing? And that made me laugh so hard. Because it's like the first thing I noticed about him was his fucking glasses.
I was like, oh, what a douche.
And then she goes, I don't want to be a sexy scientist. He goes, well, that's insane. That's like me saying I don't want to be a sexy FBI agent. We can't help or change who we are. Oh my God, that's so funny to me. I love it.
This revelation that he actually reads all of her books cover to cover. Oh my
God.
Yeah. Marry him. Brennan, marry him now.
He gives her this pep talk. He starts telling her, reminding her of all the reviews of her books. She's like, what the hell? And then she asks him if he's read her books. And he's like, every single word. And she was like, wow. So I would be so shocked too.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh my God, that's so nice. You know, it's really nice.
It is really sweet. He's such a good friend to her.
And then what does she do?
I closed my notes.
Oh, well, she said, well, you help me. I'm going to help you. So she basically cracks his back. Like she fixes his back pain by cracking it or something. Cause he was like, no. And then she just does some manipulation and cracks it. And he's like, oh, what did you do?
He's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Anyway,
this is great.
They're so cute. This is
like a week later.
They're so cute.
They're so cute. It's just gotta happen.
It's time. It's okay. Let it go. Let it go.
Who is your king of the lab?
Here we go. First of all, we all know how we think about this episode. The writing was great.
I love
the guest stars and all the choices they made. I love them. The king of the lab. Okay. It's a toss up. Love Cam. I loved Cam. I like Cam not taking any shit. That was one of my favorite parts. But now that we went on that sort of deep dive into, I've already forgotten his name.
New Yorker?
Robini Lahiri. We went in for a deep dive on that guy. Yeah, screw it. I'm going to say he's my king of the lab.
No way.
I think he was great.
The king of the lab is clearly Cam. That was exactly what I said. The way that she shut down Hodgins and like in such a professional way.
Okay, so Ronobir Lahiri can be our prince of the lab.
Yeah.
Can I have a prince?
Okay.
Please. Please, yes, mommy.
You can have a prince.
Who's your rat?
My rat is Hodgins. I'm sorry, Hodgins.
Oh, but wow.
Get your shit together.
Wow.
He's gotta get it together.
Yeah, he was on the radar, but I'm gonna give it to Angela on my side.
Fair.
I thought Angela was weird. Weird.
Angela, I felt like she was hitting on Wendell the whole time.
Right, when she first met him, and then after when they talked about the cigarette and all that stuff, and she's standing like 2 inches from his face.
Yeah.
Wow, the more you talk, you know, wow, Wendell, wow. And then she walks away from him and says, good luck. I was like, oh my God.
Bye.
Her choices were, like, those choices were weird. It was very strange. And then she was angry with Sweets.
Yeah.
about the fact that the intern was wrong about something. Anyway, I thought Angela was crazy.
She's still blaming him for breaking her
breakup. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
So would you say that this is shaping up to be one of your favorite seasons so far?
This is a good question, because I think that it's because every episode has been, like, it's been consistent, you know, consistently, you know, well-written, well-acted by all these wonderful guest stars. I mean, like, last episode we had Scoot McNairy. We have, like, all these wonderful people popping in, like our coffee guy here, the guy who played the publisher, the woman who was the victim's lover. Like, it was very colorful. And there's a lot of backstory. Like, there's a lot of details. I really appreciate the characters being so developed, even in this short period of time. Like, we knew the woman who was having the relationship with the victim. We knew all about her. She was very good at, like, showing us who she was. And then the coffee guy and the publisher, they were all very like, okay,
there's lots of detail. Yeah.
And then the intern had this great, crazy backstory. So much detail. So I just, I'm really, really loving it. And I can't wait for the next episode. The whole Zach thing, though, I don't know, man. All right. On that note, I want to thank everybody for listening. We got a message today on our Instagram from one of our listeners, and I just, you know who you are. I haven't heard back whether they want to be mentioned or not, so I don't want to blow up their spot. But I just want to say that we love hearing from you. We love hearing. It gives us so much motivation to keep going, and we really enjoy doing this together. I hope, Brittany, you enjoy doing this with me as I do with you. And we love to hear from people. I think it's really, really fun and fantastic. And I don't know, I think this season's great. It's like really a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Love it
so far. Yeah. So follow us on Instagram, follow us on TikTok, email us if you want. I have all that in the show notes. If you need to get in touch with us, you can follow me and Brittany on social media as well. All that's in the show notes. And I just want to thank you again for listening to this episode of Squintcast.
Nailed it.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Squintcast with me, Kelly Booth, and my and your new friend, Brittany Elsner. The Bones theme is performed by The Crystal Method. They can be found on Instagram and YouTube at The Crystal Method and at thecrystalmethod.com. Intro and outro music is by Twisterium at Pixabay. Cover art was done by Irena Dolence Stajan. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at Squintcast. Email us at squintcastpodcast@gmail.com. You can find me at fab_empire_ on Instagram and TikTok. Brittany is at Brittany81523 on Instagram. See you next time.